Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 272. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. Thanks to you, our Slow Flowers podcast listenership has spiked considerably, climbing from about 3,500 monthly downloads a year ago to 7,000 monthly downloads now. I believe a good part of the reason behind this doubling of our audience is the power of story. Our guests feel safe and supported in the amazing Slow Flowers community that we've created here. While few of us have met face-to-face, we feel as if we know one another. That's due to social media, sure, but nothing beats actually hearing a story shared by the teller in her or his authentic voice. This past weekend, I attended the TEDx Seattle event, and it may come as no surprise to those of you who've watched TED Talks online or attended a very similar event in your city that it was a terrific experience. I wasn't sure what to expect, but I was inspired to attend because I learned that our good friend Lisa Wadd of the Flower House and Detroit Flower Week had recently been invited to present at TEDx Detroit. I wanted to learn more about the innovators and big thinkers in my own community. One of the speakers, public radio host Celeste Headley, paraphrased a wise saying that she attributes to Larry King, which goes like this: "You will learn nothing by what you say today. You will learn volumes by what you hear." Hey, that should be the motto of this podcast. Another former public radio correspondent, Elizabeth Arnold, who now spends her time reporting on the Arctic, shared this, and it really resonated with me. She said, "As a journalist, my job is to seek the truth, to bear witness to the truth, to report the truth, and to put a human face on the truth." Both of these speakers ignited my imagination about the possibilities and potential of the Slow Flowers movement. I was encouraged to realize that what we're doing here on this podcast is powerful. Through this podcast, you are invited to hear leading voices in our community. Their stories move our emotions and spark our ideas about what is possible through community. I was personally inspired to take pride in what I'm doing as a, quote, flower journalist. I know that's rather pompous, isn't it? Well, I'm motivated to make flowers more honest, to tell the truth about what's happening in the floral industry, good or bad, and to report on it through the human story. I hope you feel the value of this effort. Growing listener numbers are one indication to me that it's worth all the time and sweat equity that I've invested in creating unique programming every week for you. In fact, for the past 173 consecutive weeks, which adds up to more than 3 years. Today's guest shares one of those inspiring stories, a narrative that keeps me motivated to continue with this podcast. Please meet Michael Genovese of Summer Dreams Farm. You can see a photo of what Michael looked like the first time I laid eyes on him at the show notes at deborahprinzing.com. Let's just say his arms were filled with dahlias and he had a big grin on his face. That was just over a year ago when I traveled to Detroit to experience the Flower House and serve as co-host of the Field Today's dinner that took place during the weekend exhibition. Michael showed up on setup day, and frankly, things were a mess. The area where the big event tent was erected needed some major TLC, including grass cutting and the removal of some tree stumps and a beat-up chain-link fence. We had volunteers and time and maybe a rake or two, but nothing close to what was needed to turn a wild yard into a gourmet dining experience in just a few hours. Michael had arrived from his dahlia farm in Oxford, about 45 minutes north of Detroit. His truck was filled with buckets of gorgeous and fresh dahlias that he wanted to donate to the Flower House Project to support florists who were his new customers from his first year as a flower farmer. I was blown away by the variety, color, and health of his dahlias as he unloaded the gifted flowers from the truck. He must have chatted with a few of the volunteers inside the tent because someone asked him about tools. I'm not exactly sure how this happened, but we noticed that Michael disappeared. As it turns out, he had driven all the way back to his farm and returned later with enough of the right tools to A, remove those trip hazard stumps, and B, yank out that relic of a chain link fence. It was a miracle. Casey Cronquist, administrator of Certified American Grown Brand, and Bill Stotts, whose spouse Liz Andre Stotts was deeply involved in the Flower House core team, were part of this magical transformation too. It was a sight to behold, and it made the dinner a huge success. That kind of kismet, connection, and community only happens because of people like Michael. He is a rare individual. Well, Michael and I reunited recently at Lisa's Detroit Flower Week, where we both presented as speakers. We grabbed a few moments before the very special banquet held inside the Detroit Public Library to record this podcast. Here's a bit more about Michael from his Summer Dreams Farm about page. My story begins with immigrant grandparents in post-war Sicily who left everything in search of the American dream. My grandfathers were, among other things, subsistence farmers in the old country. They settled in Detroit in the 1950s and, like most other immigrants, raised much of their own food in their backyard vegetable gardens while working low-paying jobs. My parents fulfilled the American dream, getting graduate degrees and pursuing professional careers. They too had a love of the land and completed their Master Gardener certification prior to purchasing a small farm in the Oxford area. They decided to grow Christmas trees and established a choose and cut farm. For years they struggled working their full-time jobs and commuting evenings and weekends to develop their farm while raising my brother and I. After years of sacrifice and hard work, they created a very popular Christmas tree farm, bringing enjoyment to the many families who come out to the farm in search of the perfect tree. I was lucky enough to grow up on this farm, learning from their work ethic and enjoying the fresh air of the country. After getting a business degree from Wayne State University, I joined the work world, but dreamed of starting my own farm and saved to buy my own land. In 2011, my parents received a little gift that would establish the direction I would take. My parents were asked to present a posthumous leadership award to Christmas tree grower Harvey Koop, one of their mentors in the Christmas tree industry. Receiving the award were Mrs. Koop and daughter Janet Koop Brondike. In addition to growing Christmas trees, Harvey Koop at one time was also the largest grower of dahlias in the world, with over 90 acres in production. His daughter Janet continued his legacy at Hamilton Dahlia Farm in western Michigan, growing cut flowers. It was after this presentation that Janet sent my parents the gift of some dahlia tubers. Those dahlias grew into a passion for me. I had never seen anything like them. Over the next few years, as those few plants multiplied, so did my interest. When the flowers bloomed, I cut and gave them as gifts to friends and family. After seeing the joy and excitement in people's eyes when receiving these flowers, it hit me that this is what I wanted to do. In 2014, I worked with Janet on her farm, learning from her, much like my parents learned from Harvey a generation earlier. We cut flowers, worked at the farmer's market, and harvested tubers together. Janet shared a wealth of knowledge and years of experience with me. This gave me the confidence I needed to start my own farm. The following year, I started my own path, buying land and creating Summer Dreams Farm. Almost immediately, I was overwhelmed. Still working full-time to fund my fledgling business, I learned there were not enough hours in the day to get everything done. With limited time and equipment, and knowing it was impossible to accomplish everything on my own, I called on friends and family for help. Somehow, we managed to make it to August, and my flower field turned from a green forest to every hue imaginable. But the challenge was just beginning. I started selling at a local farmer's market and going to the area florist showing my flowers. After my first month, my sales were going slow. I was working over 100 hours per week and had little to show for it. One morning, my mother took some flowers to Parsonage Events in Clarkston, and that is when the tide began to turn. Owner Liz Stotts was busy working on wedding arrangements when one of her employees went to her and said, "You need to see this." Not knowing what it was, she begrudgingly left her task. She was overwhelmed with my mother's armful of colorful dahlias, which happened to be one of her favorite flowers. A few days later, she came out to visit my farm. I remember she was almost speechless when she saw the field full of color. At that point, Liz had a choice: to keep my existence a coveted secret to set her apart in the area, or to share my existence with others. I am thankful she chose the latter. One of the people Liz introduced me to was a photographer named Heather Saunders. Right away, Heather fell in love with my flowers and my story. Out of her passion for what I was trying to do and the kindness of her heart, she told me that she wanted to help. I didn't realize right away how talented she was. That year, she captured images of my flowers in a way I never thought imaginable. Through her images, I was able to start to share my story. As the days grew shorter and the nights colder, there was still one more chapter in my story. The florist I had been working with told me about an event, the likes of which had not been done before. The florist and designer Lisa Wadd of Pot and Box had purchased an abandoned home in Detroit with the goal of bringing it back to life one last time. On a brisk October weekend, florists from all over the country traveled to Detroit to turn this home into a three-day art installation, covering the home with fresh-cut flowers. The day before the frost put an end to my season, we picked over 3,000 dahlias to donate to the project. What this talented team of individuals did with them took my breath away. At this event, I was introduced to designers from coast to coast as passionate about my flowers as I was. Here, I was introduced to the American Grown Flower Movement and the farms and individuals behind them. I share my story with you for many reasons. I am fiercely proud of where I come from, of the hard work, risks, and sacrifices my family made over the years. I'm equally proud of the business I have built. It started with a dream, and it has turned into reality through sacrifice and hard work. I'm excited for what the future holds. In my wildest dreams, I could not have imagined what I achieved in my first year, and I am eager for everything ahead of me. Above all, and most importantly, I am humbled by the support, mentoring, and experience that others have given me. Without the help of each and every one of the individuals described above, and many more, I would not be who I am today or have accomplished the things I have. Quite frankly, none of this would exist without them. For the people in my life, I will be forever grateful. Okay, you're probably tearing up as I'm about to do, so I'm going to stop talking and turn on the interview. You'll enjoy meeting Michael, and if you haven't discovered him yet, and I know a lot of you have, check out his social places to enjoy his playful spirit and truly inspiring story. I'll share those links at our show notes for episode 272. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and I'm coming to you from the Detroit Public Library with Michael Genovese. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
This is kind of a cool space, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's a beautiful building right in the heart of Detroit.
Well, you are a Michigan dahlia farmer, and you own Summer Dreams Farms. Farm or farms?
Farm.
Summer Dreams Farm.
Yeah.
So I'm delighted to have a little bit of time with you to share your story with the listeners of the Slow Flowers Podcast. My first impression of you, Michael, is a year ago when you showed up with a truck filled with crazy beautiful dahlias at the Detroit Flower House, and you've been on my radar ever since. That was such a spirit of generosity and community that I just think that's the kind of man you are, and I want to share your story. So how did you become a dahlia farmer? Let's start there.
So it's kind of a long story, but I've grown up in agriculture. My parents have a choose and cut Christmas tree farm, so I grew up going to all the conference meetings and being out on the farm from when I was 6 years old working.
And remind us where that is.
In Oxford, Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah, and about in between Flint and Detroit, maybe 45 minutes north of Detroit. So I grew up in 4-H. I showed poultry at the 4-H fair. After I graduated from high school, I was on the board of directors for Oakland County Farm Bureau.
Oakland, Michigan.
Oakland County Farm Bureau.
Okay,
yeah, so yeah. Oakland County, Michigan.
Okay.
And then I also, so I represented the county's young farmers. So Oakland County is it's a pretty urban county, but once you get into the northern suburbs, you start seeing some more agriculture. But I developed policy at the state level, and I've been to Washington, D.C., supporting agricultural, trying to push agriculture, sitting with our senators. I've had conversations with Debbie Stabenow, who was the chair of the House Ag Committee, with Tom Vilsack, who's the Secretary of Agriculture. Yeah, so I've got a big a background in agriculture, so I didn't come into it blind, but we were given a gift of some dahlia tubers by the daughter of the former largest grower in the world. His name was Harvey Koop. He had 90 acres of dahlias in West Michigan. He had passed away. My parents presented him an award, and his daughter, Janet, gave my parents some dahlia tubers. We grew them in our garden. I thought they were the most amazing flowers ever. I didn't know what a dahlia was before we had gotten these.
But this guy had been like a Christmas tree farmer,
yeah,
right?
He was also a Christmas tree farmer. Okay. Yeah, that's right. He was a large Christmas tree farmer. And it's kind of funny because he was a mentor to my parents. So my parents knew him really well. So we were given the gift of these tubers. We raised them. I would give them away to people, and the flowers away to people. People would love them. They had never seen anything like it. I had never seen anything like it. So I split them, got a patch of about 50 going, and I thought, you know what, maybe I can turn this into a business. You don't see these in floral shops. I don't know anyone else that grows these, so maybe I can do it. So Janet still grew dahlias on the other side of the state. So I went over and I shadowed Janet. And
how long ago was this?
This was in 2014.
Okay. Wow.
So a couple years ago. So I worked with her on the farm, and I helped pick. I helped her at her farmer's market, and I helped pull up tubers in the fall. And
it's kind of apprentice.
Yeah,
though, right?
Which is really cool because her father, Harvey, was a mentor to my parents in the Christmas tree industry, and Janet was a mentor to me in the dahlia industry.
Awesome.
Or in the fresh cut flower industry. So that was a really neat experience. So the following year I bought about 5,500 tubers from her, and I planted my first dahlia field trying to grow commercially, and it started pretty slow. But I was introduced, actually my mom, I give her a hard time sometimes because she's so passionate about what I'm doing, but I do appreciate what she does. She took a bucket of my flowers last year. I was just selling at a farmer's market, and things were going really slow. And she walked into a floral shop, Liz Stotes, over at the Parsonage.
Who we had on the podcast at the Detroit Flower House, right?
Absolutely. So she saw my dahlias, went berserk, because they have such a hard time getting quality dahlias here in Michigan. She went berserk. She came out to the farm the next day, was in heaven. Like, she brought her daughter, and she's just running around the field. Oh, these are so beautiful. When can I get them from
your
you?
Your mother is your secret marketing weapon.
Yeah, exactly. She's actually done more than I'd like to admit sometimes. But I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Kathy.
Yes. Thank you, Mom. But Liz, bless her soul, without her, I wouldn't know half the florists. She actually had an event at her shop where she invited all of the other local event florists out. And I picked a few samples of all my dahlias. We had dinner over there, introduced them to my product and what I was doing. Everyone started freaking out. I think that night I left with an order for 700 stems. And
this was like July of 15?
Well, no, this was the last week of October. Or August, rather, in 2015.
So just a little bit more than a year ago.
Yeah, wow. Just a little bit more than a year ago. So I was really excited. So orders started coming in, and then they said, you know, if you still have dahlias, try and get them at Detroit, at the Flower House event that Lisa's doing. I didn't know Lisa at this point. She wasn't able to make it to the dinner. But so at the end of the season, the night before our last frost, I went through the field, picked as many flowers as I could. I felt bad because some of them weren't quite at my quality level. But I picked the best flowers that I could, and I think I brought around 3,500 stems to Flower House for the dinner that night.
They were crazy beautiful.
Thank you.
It was because I think it was the day that, or maybe the day before Flower House opened to the public, mm-hmm. a lot of the interior designs were finished, but your dahlias ended up embellishing the whole exterior space in the chain link fence and woven through all kinds of interesting applications. And it was just really special.
Yeah, it was, you can work hard and you can try and develop something, but without the support of other people, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Right. You and I've been very fortunate, very, very fortunate to have a lot of people that have been supportive of me.
Well, you've addressed a couple things. One is that you made this leap through meeting Liz, this leap from the farmer's market level of small transactions to the professional florist. That's an important leap I want to talk about. And then I think also this fact that there's obviously been a pent up demand and no supply. So at this perfect time, you decided to grow a crop that everyone wants. And I don't know that you were aware of that. Were you?
Or? No idea when I was going into this. So I knew people loved the dahlias and I knew that I didn't see them anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I understand reasons why you don't see them anywhere, but I knew that she had a Janet had a cut flower business on the west side of the state. So she had about 4 acres, to put it in perspective.
So she was more of a tuber grower than a cut flower grower?
No. She did tuber. Her father did tubers.
Okay.
Actually sold them on the back of Kellogg's cereal boxes way back in the day.
Oh, that's such a Michigan thing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But she, after the business passed into her hands, she continued the, she started the cut flower side of it.
I see.
So she just did dahlias and just cut flowers. And I thought, you know, if she's able to do it, there's a smaller market in the Grand Rapids region than there is in southeastern Michigan. She had a few people from Chicago coming up, but not too many. I thought maybe I can make a go of it here.
But there wasn't really any kind of competition between the two of you just because dahlias are so local, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Every once in a while, in fact, some of the florists I sell to now, if they all needed dahlias, they would send one person over there to pick up all their flowers and then bring them back to the Detroit area. But what actually was happening, she was starting to get out of the business. So last fall, so 2015 was her, she was done. She decided to retire, so she actually isn't growing dahlias any longer.
So it's a nice transition then.
Yeah, it really is. So I think I definitely filled a void of her going away. I know a lot of people were really excited that I was picking up the mantle.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't really planned.
No, it was not at all. Not at all.
So right now, you're in your second year. You've just kind of wrapped up, right?
Yeah. Frost hit us night before last, so we can finally sleep a little bit again.
I know. Because you are doing this as a second career.
Yeah. So right now, I work full time. I've got a desk job. I'm a supply chain and risk manager.
Good thing you know about supply chains, right?
Yeah. You know, I want to say that too. I grew up on the farm and I have an agricultural background. I actually graduated from Wayne State right across the street from the library.
Right here is
where I went to school. And so I got a business degree, actually a supply chain degree over at Wayne. And I started working in the automotive industry. It's southeastern Michigan. I'd say this region would not exist without the automotive industry.
Right. It's an obvious choice for you.
Exactly. So I actually worked in purchasing, and I had a little bit of experience in the finance department for the company I was working for. But the off-the-farm experience was huge. The connections that you make, the people that you meet, just the supply base. Like now, farmers, you have to be you have to be able to solve problems as a farmer, whether it's equipment or anything like that. I know all the fabricators in town now because of my purchasing experience.
Wow.
If I ever need anything made or anything done, I know who to go to. Even things as like stickers or if I need any stamps, I'm trying to create a little bit of a brand in my business, and I know places I can go to have all this. These things made, and the experience was huge, and even how to run your business,
right?
Being in that really corporate setting, I am thankful for the experience.
And it sounds like you never really thought, oh, I'm going to be a Christmas tree farmer, but you have this love and passion about just your agricultural roots,
well,
right?
I knew I wanted to do something in agriculture, and I do love the Christmas tree farm. So it's the thing in agriculture. I mean, right now, we've had conversations today. There's a tsunami that's about to hit, or a typhoon, rather, that's about to hit Washington and Oregon. And there's things like that can happen in agriculture. You only have so much control over what you're growing.
Right.
So in my mind, actually, approaching this, I was thinking I can do the Christmas trees and the dahlias. And the really cool thing about those two crops is when one is busy, the other one's a little bit slower. So
counter-cyclical.
Exactly. Wow, okay. So by having the two, it actually gives you, it diversifies your income. So if there is some event that happens, if you have a drought, or like dahlias, if we have a huge windstorm, my dahlias all fall over.
Because you're all field grown, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I don't have anything undercover. In the future, I plan to. But even with that, I mean, there's still things that can happen. So you kind of protect yourself. You hedge your bet when you're able to diversify your crops. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm interested in some of the winter greens and things like that I can do with the Christmas trees too.
Well, yeah, I mean, that there's demand for that. All those florists are going to ask you, what do you have next?
I've got people lining up after Thanksgiving. I'm going to see what I can do and try and grow that part of the business also.
Wow. So you're, tell me about your acreage and how you use, is it land you have kind of a different model, like you have some family land and some land you purchase?
Yeah, so the, I'm growing the dahlias, on the same land where we have the Christmas tree farm. So it's 31 acres. It's a smaller farm. 19 acres of it is Christmas trees. But we had some space that we were using for some nursery stock, and we're getting out of that side of the business. So I turned that into where I'm growing my dahlias. So right now, my field's about 3/4 of an acre. That particular field has somewhere between 16 to 18,000 plants in it. And I have a couple other smaller fields. So I've got around 22,000 plants total, about an acre total.
Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
How many did you grow last year?
5,500 in my first year.
So you've about quadrupled.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm hoping next year, I'm thinking around 30,000, but I'm thinking my sales are going to be better because I know better what to plant.
Yeah.
So your key varieties, like this year, every week I was selling out of my Burgundy dahlias.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely going to have more Burgundy next year. Cafe. Mm-hmm. I'm going to switch up how many I'm growing a little bit. So
certain colors that maybe you didn't need as many yellows or whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to be sitting down with the wholesaler and a lot of my florists because they're booking work right now. By working with them and learning from them, I can forecast what I need to plant for next year. They know that right now I know coral is going to be a color in this area, at least in this region. Coral is going to be big next year. Burgundy is a safe bet. Cafe is always a safe bet. Your whites are always a safe bet. But for some of those other unique colors, your pinks and your fuchsias and things like that, you need to, it's hard as a grower. You want to plant enough so you can always supply people, but you don't want to plant stuff that you're not going to sell at the same time.
Right. Okay, so you're quadrupled this year. You're going to maybe have a more modest but strategic growth next year.
Yes, yes.
How are you doing this with a full-time job?
I don't sleep. I don't eat.
What do people call that? I mean, people call that the side hustle, right?
Oh, my God. This has been a really cool, Detroit Flower Week has been a really cool event, and you hear from a lot of people, and I think the most common theme is working your butt off. If you're going to try and start a business or get something going, you work hard. Nothing's handed to you, and hopefully you can get a little lucky, and other people are supporting you. But, no, I would say during dahlia season, during harvest season, I've probably been doing somewhere between 90 to 100 hours a week. And then all year, even in the winter, because you're splitting tubers, and then with the Christmas tree farm, I'm probably running my slow time is 60.
Wow.
60 to 70
Because you're
hours.
Still working with your folks on the Christmas tree farm?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I help them as much as I can. It's mostly during the Christmas season because in the spring it's hard to
Because people
everything.
Come out and cut
Yeah,
trees.
It's choose and cut. So, okay. Yeah, they come out. We give them a saw and a cart, and they go through the field with the snow and everything and
just
pick
as a
the perfect tree.
Just as a side question, will you ever do a you-pick dahlia farm? Or are you, like, ton with the public after Christmas?
You know, if I did ever get into that, and I've had a lot of people want to come out and pick the flowers and run through the field, I think I would have a separate field that's just
dedicated for
you pick. It's hard. Once you get to a commercial level, and when people are picking, you have to train somebody how to pick. I remember talking to Janet, and she let people come out on the farm, but they had to work with her for a half an hour before they were allowed to go out in her field and pick. She had people that would cut an entire dahlia plant at the base and say, this is just one stem, right?
Cut these little short stems.
Well, that's if they're picking their own, if that's what they want, they can do that. But you got to be careful. You want to make everybody happy, but at the same time, you can't let it hurt your business.
Right, right. So that's just, I was being foolish in a way.
Yeah,
Your business is really almost all business to business now. You're not selling really to the consumer anymore,
just
right?
At the farmer's market. And if somebody at the farmer's market has, I've had several people come out and bought all the flowers for the wedding from me this year. They're doing their own wedding.
But they're kind of like almost like neighbors or people in your community.
Yeah, in the community. Yeah. I had one lady, she was a florist, but she drove all the way from Cleveland, which is like a 2.5 hour drive, 3 hour drive up to our place to get my dahlias because she had to have high quality dahlias. Mm-hmm. So she drove all the way out to me.
So now your model, in terms of your pie, you're selling to a lot of wedding and event florists correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And you're also in a relationship with one major wholesaler, is that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I'm selling with, my biggest customer was actually the wholesaler this year. And then my second largest customer, if you combine all the different stores, was actually a higher end grocery retailer. Oh. I was making 12 to 14 stem, just really basic arrangements and delivering them to their store. It actually worked out, was on my way into my desk job so I could drop them off in the morning. But, that worked out really well for the colors that I wasn't selling to the florist and to the wholesaler. I still had all these flowers. I mean, at peak production, my field's producing 18,000 stems a week. So,
needed multiple channels. Then.
Exactly. Yeah. And channels that aren't color specific are really important for what I'm doing. And I realized that this year. So the grocery, I was getting less per stem, but I was pushing so much volume that it kind of made up for it. So they were my second largest customer. And then from there, the farmer's market was the next. And after that, it was all my other florists. But I would say 80% of my sales were through maybe six different channels or six different groups.
That's interesting. It's like your passionate friendships are with the florists.
Yeah.
Because they're your big, your friend, you know, they're your friends and your,
exactly.
your peers.
And the thing in the cut flowers though, you can't, if you want to make a living off of it, you have to sell a volume.
Yep.
You can't make a living off of selling 500 stems a week for 10 weeks.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. The money's not there.
Right.
And the florists have to make money too. I mean, I'm being told that I'm really competitive in my pricing, but at the same time, I can't charge $5 for a dahlia stem. It doesn't work in their business model. So the only way I can do this is by doing volume.
Right. And then your balance between like the fashion palette and then the kind of mass market palette is absorbed by those different channels.
Exactly. Yeah. It's working out really well. I'm going to try and get, I know Whole Foods is able to buy it locally. I know there's a whole thing that you have to go through to get in with them, but we have several stores I'm going to try and sell to them next year. And then some other higher end grocery. Because dahlias aren't, I can't go into a normal florist shop and sell dahlias. They'll give me 25 cents a stem. And I can't justify doing this.
You're not a commodity. No. You are a couture product.
Yeah, exactly.
And I want to talk a little bit about your personal standards, because you alluded to this in your presentation yesterday about, you know, because these flowers are ending up in a lot of special events and weddings, you have been very attentive to issues like you know, insects or disease. So how do you handle that?
So I really try and be as, it's all about sustainability. Mm-hmm. We want to move, I want to be farming on the same land 30 years from now. Okay. That's my goal. I bought 20 acres. I'm investing in the local community. It's important to me that I'm not doing any damage to it. At the same time, I can't have my clients receiving dahlias where a bride's holding her wedding bouquet, walking down the aisle, and an earwig crawls out of it, or the half the petals are eaten because there's Japanese beetle damage on it. So, I'm trying to walk that fine line between those two things. So, I'm not organic at this time. I can't figure out a way of growing on the scale that I'm growing while being organic. That said. Most of the things that I'm using, in fact, everything that I'm using is pretty mild. In fact, and this is one of my things. I grew up in conventional agriculture and I represent it. And I was talking about my experience with the Farm Bureau. Organic still uses pesticides, and a pesticide doesn't just scare bugs away. It still kills insects. So there are organic labeled pesticides that have the same impact on the environment as synthetic pesticides. It's just they're from a natural source. So I'm passionate about all forms of agriculture, mm-hmm. as long as people are doing it responsibly.
Yeah.
And there's sustainable ways of doing it. And there's real, in certain cases, it's more beneficial to do it conventionally than it is organically. So
yeah,
that's all I'll say on that yeah. subject. I know people can get really passionate about it, but quality is really important yeah. to me. I can't market my product if I don't have a high quality
right.
product.
That's your brand.
Yeah.
You're building your brand. Summer yes. Dreams Farm has yes. a beautiful, beautiful website now.
Thank you.
Great photography. How and why did you decide to invest really early on in your business to create your visual story?
You know, it's hard to grow a business. And this is one thing that a lot of, I think, farms need to catch on. Farmers are committed to growing a good product, and they think, okay, I have a good product, people should just buy from me.
Find me.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I can understand the mentality. Farming's hard work. You're busting your butt outside all day, and you're proud of what you're doing. But that marketing side of it, you don't see too many farmers trying to pick up on it. And I know I want to get my product out there. I want to gain some trust. Plus, I with Dahlias, I've also got the tuber side of the business. So I want to grow my tuber sales. Now, tubers are something that I can easily ship all over the United States.
Have you started doing that yet?
Yeah, last year. Oh, okay. Last year, in fact, it was huge. Like, I was amazed. So I wasn't even planning on doing tuber sales last year, but I planted my fields, and I still had 8,000 tubers left over. I thought, what am I going to do with all these? So I posted online, and actually huge response, huge demand for my tubers. And it was great that people were so excited about the quality that they were receiving. I have the philosophy where if it's not going to hurt me or cost me to do a little bit extra for somebody, to do that for them. So we were talking about quality on my flowers. My florists, they order 20 stems from me. As long as I have the stems available, they get 22 or 23. If one breaks or there's some damage mm-hmm. on something.
You're kind of adding that unexpected over-delivery.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. If they're thrilled about it, if they have an arrangement that, oh, that just doesn't quite have enough, it doesn't cost them any extra to put one extra flower mm-hmm. in there. It mm-hmm. means a lot to them. Mm-hmm. I know they don't get that when they're buying from a wholesaler, for
right.
example.
Right.
And same thing with my tubers. So my tubers, someone would order 10 tubers from me. If I had them, I'd throw an extra one in there. So that's kind of my philosophy. Mm-hmm. I quality is huge. If I don't have good quality, it's harder to do. I understand it's harder to do business with me than it is with a wholesaler. So I need to make sure that my quality is better than the wholesaler. I have to offer that added value for somebody
yeah.
to have the inconvenience, mm-hmm. air quotes, inconvenience mm. of dealing with me.
So that kind of what you've just described is
yeah.
also part of your brand. That's not yeah, that's yeah. not the visual
yeah,
as much as
yeah.
just the
so
the,
with
the brand quality.
Yeah, with the visuals, I learned early on, and you do a search online, and you can definitely tell. By having quality images, it actually lends to your brand and contributes to the quality of your product. So if you have two photos side by side, and you can go on, and with consumers being able to go online and look at thousands of different providers of product, until they receive your product, the only thing that you have to display your quality is the images, or your images, or your website, or how you're set up. So I understand that part of it in my business experience and background and in my business degree. You see this and the importance of it. So I at that dinner, there was a photographer. Her name's Heather Saunders. And Liz introduced me to her. And absolutely amazing photography. And she saw my dahlias, became passionate about it, and she took it on almost as a personal project.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a great relationship over the past year and a half. And she's come out many times. She does all my photography for my website. And we're going to try and turn it into something else, maybe start doing prints and calendars and getting into that side of it also. And that's another avenue. So
it's kind of like from day one, you had this beautiful presence.
Yeah. And it lends credibility to your business.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. Is somebody... The lady, she drove all the way from Cleveland. She had never seen my flowers before. I'm not sure if she had ever talked to any of my florists before, but she saw the images that mm-hmm. I put forward. She saw, I take when I'm doing delivery to the market, I take a picture of all the bouquets that are going to market. It's what the product I'm actually selling. These aren't staged photos that I'm doing. And a true representation of the product is really important. Talking to Heather out in the field when we're getting photos, like some of these flowers have a lot of variability in them. I will get several examples of that flower and put them on. We have pictures on the board for scale with a ruler. I get true representations of what that person's going to get.
I love that when you have the ruler in there.
Yeah. It looks really, and there's some style that you want to have and a theme, and it's all part of building the brand.
So Heather's doing a lot of photography for your website and your online catalog, but your presence in social media is totally Michael, right? You are so prolific with what you're posting.
So there, actually, on my Facebook page, Heather also has the ability, and she puts every once in a while she'll put a post up there. But yeah, everything I'm doing,
kind of like the Instagram stuff.
Yeah. All the Instagram stuff is me. It's my phone. Any second that I have that I think about it, I do one post a day. That's my goal. It's easy because you can just push it to Facebook too. Mm-hmm. So you're killing two birds with one stone. But I'm trying to build a presence on there, and then also through Facebook. I'm experimenting a little bit with Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. I'll see where that can go. But really, the tuber side of it, I foresee in the future that the tuber side of my business can be a really large piece of the pie. So I'm trying to grow my social media presence more for that.
That's
and then
smart.
If we ever get into the prints, because that's easy to ship. I'm trying to work on ways of getting my dahlias further out. It's year two. It's still a work in progress. If I can master how to get dahlias out there, hopefully next year I'm going to experiment in the Chicago market. But if I can get them out there and transport them without damage on my flowers, I think the sky's the limit. Yeah.
Right, because tubers aren't perishable in the same way, and they they can be thrown in a box and shipped.
Exactly.
You have a different approach to getting the flowers to market, and it's just a different part of, I guess, you have to kind of switch gears and have a different approach when you're using pet flowers.
Exactly. And right now, my model has people coming to me rather than me going to people. So if I want to go to Chicago, that's going to mean I have to invest in a truck and figure out the logistics mm-hmm. side of it. So mm-hmm. This winter, I'm planning on experimenting with that and trying to get some storage systems together mm-hmm. for those dahlias to see to see how far I can get them.
Before I let you go, I want to talk a little bit about the fact that you have, I guess you'd still be considered a relatively small farm,
right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
But you've taken the step of becoming certified American Grown mm-hmm. and choosing to go that route. And I just want to know if you can explain why and what kind of caught your attention with that opportunity to brand yourself that way.
So last year at the Detroit Flower House dinner, that's where I was introduced to the American Grown movement. I met Casey, who kind of manages all of mm-hmm. that for the organization. And you know, I grew up in the industry and understood the Christmas Tree Association, and I know how much of a benefit there is to having a group and one voice for your organization. Same idea behind unions and everything and any kind of organization. You're a lot stronger with a united voice than 100 individual voices. So the American Grown movement, I know it's in its infancy really, and it's growing, but I really appreciate what it's doing. When you hear about 80% of flowers being brought in from overseas, when we've got growers who can do it better, and we can, honestly, it's better for our planet. Our standards are much higher here in the United States than what people can get away with in South America or in Africa or in all the other places that they're growing flowers. Why not grow them here? Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. honestly. So there's not only that, but by being part of the movement, it introduces me, and the network opportunities are huge. Like I said earlier, you can't get anywhere without having other people's support. So by being a member, I know if I ever wanted to call Casey, he could introduce me to other growers. I have the opportunity to go places, see other farms, learn from these other people. Plus, it's part of the brand.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is part of your brand, right?
My business card has certified American grown stamped on it, and I'm proud of that.
Right. Are you putting that on your grocery bouquets?
No. So when I was delivering to the grocery store, I would put three bouquets in a mixed bucket. They were actually packaging them, maybe trimming the stems a little bit more than I had them at the store, and then putting the cellophane around there. Next year, I might try and figure out how I can get a few rolls of maybe stamps, and when they're doing that, maybe have them put the stamp on there. But it all evolved so quickly this year. Somebody saw a Facebook post, and this is why it's important on social media too. One of my customers did a Facebook post. The buyer at this grocery saw that Facebook post, called me, and then I was doing over 100, like in the next week, I was doing over 100 arrangements a week for the grocery store. So having that presence online, I think, is huge.
And it opened that door for you.
You don't know where opportunities are going to come from. My second biggest customer came from a Facebook post that somebody did.
It's crazy.
That shared. It wasn't even my own. It was somebody else that was happy with the quality of the product that they received, shared it.
And, so your third-party endorsement works,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. It's huge. So building up that image, building up that trust and that brand, I feel, as a grower, it's really important.
That's cool. That's cool. There's so much more I want to ask you, but we have a lot to do tonight. Before we close, is there anything I didn't ask you that you want to share? We're going to put, if it's okay, some of the photos that you and Heather have done together.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Of your farm and your beautiful product on the show notes at deborahprinzing.com. We'll also have links so that people can start planning to order tubers from you next spring.
That'd be fantastic.
I don't know. When do you start taking orders?
Hopefully. So my flowers just got hit by frost.
I know. It's today.
Yes, exactly. So I have so many people excited about getting tubers from me. I'm hoping the first week of November I will have my stock put up. And the way, so everybody knows, if anyone's listening to this that wants to get tubers from me, in November I'm going to be posting what, like 25% of my final inventory, what I think it is. I don't want anyone to be disappointed. So I will start posting things then. And then as I split and I know more exact quantities, I'll be posting.
You'll be
more.
Updating that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And this will probably run after November 1st. So you get a
perfect.
Little bit of wiggle room.
Perfect. That's great.
You might be, can wait till Thanksgiving.
Okay. Awesome.
So yeah, anything that you want to add that, you think, we'd like, I don't know, to have the flower farming and floral design world hear about.
You know what? If in terms of the floral farming side of it, I'm not a designer. I don't claim to be a designer, and that's not where my passion is. My passion is in growing flowers. So I won't speak to that too much. But for growers, I'm only growing dahlias right now. I'm not trying to do anything else. And everyone has to have a model that works for them. But I do want to say, if you stretch yourself too thin, you can be a jack of all trades, but not a master of
anything.
One.
Yeah.
So, I would say see what works with you. Communicate with your florist if you're working with a wholesaler. See what they have demands for and what they're having trouble getting good quality of, a good quality product of.
Yeah.
And grow that. Don't grow something that's not going to earn you money, because at the end of the day, we're passionate about what we do. We want to do better for the world, but at the same time, you have to make money. It doesn't work unless you're earning some kind of income off of it.
Yeah.
So really communicate with your customers. I haven't had run into anybody who's not willing to share or support you. So talk to them, figure out what's going to work best for your business and what you can do.
That's great. That's good advice. If anyone's coming to ASCFG in Grand Rapids, you will be there.
I will be there. So, I'm not speaking, but I will be attending and trying to glean whatever. Or
just be someone you can sit with and say hi to.
Absolutely. And I'm happy to share. I mean, my presentation this week was on how to grow dahlias. And if anyone ever has any questions, I'm happy to share. I mean, we all do better when we're working together than if we all try and hide in our own little world. And
amen, brother. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
It's great to be together. Thanks so much for joining today's conversation. Be sure to view our show notes to meet Michael Genovese, to see photos of his work, and to learn how you can order his tubers on sale now at summerdreamsfarm.com. And I'll have that link for you as well. I have to give a shout out to Kathy Genovese, Michael's mother, who's probably his biggest fan. She's a dear supporter, and I'm so glad to have had a chance to meet her a few times recently. I wonder if Kathy will soon have to decide between Christmas trees or dahlias. One thing Michael said really resonated with me. He was referring to why he joined the Certified American Grown program, but I think it also applies hugely to the Slow Flowers movement. He said, "You're a lot stronger with a united voice than with 100 individual voices." And that's what the Slow Flowers movement is all about. This podcast has been downloaded more than 133,000 times by listeners like you. Thank you to each one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. If you value the content you receive each week, I invite you to show your thanks and support the Slow Flowers podcast with a donation. The button can be found on our homepage in the right column. Your contributions will help make it possible to transcribe future episodes of the podcast. Thank you to our lead sponsor for 2016, Certified American Grown Flowers. The Certified American Grown program and label provide a guarantee for designers and consumers on the source of their flowers. Take pride in your flowers and ask for Certified American Grown Flowers. To learn more, visit americangrownflowers.org. More sponsor thanks goes to Syndicate Sales, an American manufacturer of vases and accessories for the professional florist. Look for the American flag icon to find Syndicate's USA-made products and join the Syndicate Stars loyalty program at syndicatesales.com. A big bouquet of thanks goes to Longfield Gardens, providing home gardeners with high-quality flower bulbs and perennials. Their online store offers plants for every region and every season, from tulips and daffodils to dahlias, caladiums, and amaryllis. Visit them at lfgardens.com. A fond thank you to Arctic Alaska Peonies, a cooperative of 50 family farms in the heart of Alaska, providing high-quality, American-grown peony flowers during the months of July and August. Visit them at arcticalaskapeonies.com. And finally, thank you, Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers. Formed in 1988, ASCFG was created to educate, unite, and support commercial cut flower growers. Its mission is to help growers produce high-quality floral material and to foster and promote the local availability of that product. Learn more at ascfg.org. I'm Deborah Prinzing, host and producer of the Slow Flowers podcast. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew and Hannah Brenlin. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com. Thank you.